Ladies and gentlemen, if you could be seated, please. Good afternoon and welcome. I'm Grant Hedding, President of the SA Press Club, and I'd like to welcome you all sincerely today. And a special welcome to our guest, the Managing Director of the ABC, Mark Scott, who's accompanied by State Director and former Press Club Committee member, Sandra Winter-Dewhurst. Mark's only in Adelaide for a few hours, but he had time for a rather unique view of Adelaide this morning from the roof of the ABC building amid all the microwaves up there. So I dare say we'll see that photo in the Sunday Mail this weekend. I'll have a more formal introduction for Mark a little later. Our numerous sponsors provide very generous support to the Press Club, and with us today we have Danny Honan, Managing Director of Telstra at Countrywide, and Jeff Timms from Timms Manufacturing Jewellers. Another guest is the State MP for Waite, Martin Hamilton Smith. Other sponsors are providing our beer and wine today, so thanks to for Jacobs Creek and SA Brewing for their supplies. There's a raffle on your table as usual, three tickets for $5. Prizes include a $300 voucher from Timms Manufacturing Jewellers, from Telstra. We have Cordless phone. And some beer from SA Brewing and a gift pack from Network 10. So for now, enjoy your meal and I'll be back with you shortly. Excuse me again, ladies and gentlemen. I know we're running a little bit late today, so please continue with your meal, but we should get started. Not so many decades ago, I used to occasionally stand at the bar of the Crown and Sceptre in King William Street at 10 o'clock in the morning with a couple of other cadets with a beer in hand and learn a few lessons about court reporting from old Jim Kernahan of the now defunct Afternoon News. Jim was more than happy to help you out at any time, provided he had a beer in his hand. We'd compare our shorthand, phone through our copy to a newsroom typist, and wait for a few hours for the story to be published, or in my case, broadcast. Seriously, that seems a lifetime ago, another lifetime. Today, those of us in the media are on the front line of an extraordinary revolution. The pace of change is frenetic, the limits of technology seemingly boundless, and the public's appetite for information and entertainment insatiable. Blogs, Twitter, tweets, online, internet, Facebook, multimedia, downloads, uploads, YouTube, MySpace, iPads, iPhones, it goes on. It's a whole new language representing a totally new lifestyle. How media organisations adapt will not only shape their future, but that of the consumer as well. So imagine you're running one of these organisations responsible for its success in a dynamic environment. And that's just where our guest today, Mark Scott, finds himself at the head of one of the world's most respected public broadcasters, the ABC. For Mark, his appointment 4 years ago represented a serious career change, from the relative comfort of print industry that he knew well to the vagaries of broadcasting. Mark had spent 10 years as editor-in-chief of papers including the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, Sun Herald and The Sunday Age. Within the ABC, Mark is known for his insight into how politics and parliament works. Speaking to him just a little while ago, it seems he spends an inordinate amount of time in Canberra speaking to committees who all they do seemingly is complain about the ABC. And he's been very successful in arguing for an increase in the ABC's budget. He secured extra money for drama and children's television channel. Internal efficiencies will lead to a 24-hour news channel in the very near future. Significantly, the ABC is a leader in multimedia platforms, and Mark Scott has, of course, locked horns recently with Rupert Murdoch over moves to charge for online content. There is probably no one better in the industry who can give us an insight into where we're all going. Thank you, Mark Scott.
Well, thanks, Grant, and ladies and gentlemen, good to be with you. The next phrase is one that I rarely get to offer, so I'm going to say it now. Thanks to our sponsors. Delighted you're all able to join us today. And I thought what I might do is give you a story of what's happening at the ABC, the changes that we're going through, and to draw a little bit from there to talk about changes that are happening in the media industry and the media landscape. But to use the ABC as a case study and talk a little bit about where we are today and where we're going. The ABC is now nearly 80 years old. We started in radio, moved to television in 1956, and then about 15 years ago started our movement into the online space. But really, the ABC was created as a corporation in 1983, and we are governed and steered by a charter. And the charter tells us as a management team and as a board the kinds of areas, the kinds of responsibilities that we have as the broadcaster, the things that we need to do. Within Australia, we're meant to provide, you know, comprehensive services that are innovative. We're to contribute to the national identity, we're to inform and entertain, to reflect cultural diversity, programs of an educational nature, we're to encourage and promote musical, dramatic and performing arts. And importantly, we're to broadcast programs of wide appeal, but also specialist programs. And we're meant to do all this to provide maximum benefit to the Australian people. Maximum benefit to the Australian people. We're very unusual as a public broadcaster in that nearly all of our money comes from the taxpayers. You are all owners and shareholders of the ABC. About 97% of our operating money comes from Canberra. And that's why I go to Senate estimates. Three times a year, $1 billion, it's good money when you think of it, on an hourly rate to appear before the Senate. But it means that we have to continue to be able to demonstrate that we deliver on the trust that the public has in us and that we are worth the very significant investment of public money that we get. And I would argue, as I look at public broadcasters around the world, the public broadcasters that remain strongest are those that have a clear model of government funding, not mixed models of public broadcasting that rely in part on government funding and in part on advertising revenue. But we need to ensure of the money that we get, we provide maximum benefit to the Australian people. And so our question now is, how do we do this in a digital world? We operated for most of our time in an analog world, and it was pretty simple. We broadcast a television channel, and that television channel was received by our audiences. We had a number of radio services, but it was us, the broadcaster, broadcasting out to the audience that really had quite a narrow array of choices, and we were part of that mix. But now we are moving to an era where, rather than having four or five television channels available for you here, you'll have very shortly 15 to 20 free-to-air television channels, hundreds of subscription television channels, tens of thousands of radio stations around the world delivered to you via the internet, and countless websites, blogs, abilities for you to access information. So where does the ABC fit in that era? Let me start with television. We've gone from having one television network, now we call it ABC One, to having three on air now and a news channel still to come, and we're currently broadcasting in HD. I think it's fair to say that part of what we offer on ABC One is an example of the ABC broadcasting programs of wide appeal and specialist content. And there's no doubt a program like Spicks and Specs, which week in, week out is our top rating program, is a program of wide appeal. And we believe by broadcasting Spicks and Specs, by introducing new talent to the Australian public, as we do, to provide broad, inclusive entertainment like that, that is part of our charter, just as much as delivering a program like Catalyst, a specialist scientific program, a specialist program for specialist audiences. And no commercial network seeking to maximise its ratings would put a program like Catalyst in the heart of prime time, but the ABC does, because ratings, whilst they are important, they're not the only thing that is important to us. We want programs that connect with the Australian people, but we want specialist, distinctive programming that only the ABC would offer. And the ABC has put science program into prime time for the best part of 30 years, and we will continue to be committed to do so. And also we're experimenting on ABC One with programs that take advantage of new technology. Q&A is an interesting example of this. To a degree, Q&A is a classic old-style analogue program. You've got a host, a panel of experts, a studio audience asking questions, and some members of our audience might want to think back a generation or more to Robert Moore, Monday night, Monday conference, similar format. But what we do now is we open up that conversation to people at home who can text messages in or video messages in. We open it up to the Twitter conversation that is now taking place. And what is interesting about this, as far as the ABC is concerned, and Q&A is an example, is that sometimes our audiences are ahead of us. We were running Q&A, a forum for spirited debate, and we realised after the program was running that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of members of our audience at home were having a debate with each other or providing commentary to each other on what was happening on the program on Twitter. Before the program, and Tony Jones even said to the audience that this conversation was taking place, our audience wanted to engage in the content, wanted to engage with each other, and that's what Q&A now does. ABC 2 is newer, but we are really heartened by the kinds of growth we're seeing in ABC 2. In 2009, on average, more than 2 million Australians each week turned into ABC 2, and this year that reaches up a further 22%. And now 3.3 million people a week are watching programming that we're putting to air on ABC 2. And we're using ABC 2 to trial and do different things in a similar sort of way to the way that the BBC has used its multi-channels. Some of the most popular content in the BBC over the last decade started out on BBC 3, and then when it found an audience, they moved it to its broader networks, BBC 1 and BBC 2. So we've started comedy, a review with Miles Barlow, a little bit controversial at times. I was glad it was on ABC 2 with a smaller audience. But a low-cost, low-budget comedy, newer, risk-taking, pioneering comedy that we first broadcast on ABC 2 and now have brought to a late-night time slot on ABC 1. And we've sold this format to the US and the UK, Scandinavia and Belgium. It was nominated for AFI Awards and Logie Awards. We have a new drama, which is about a group of young people forming an inner-city rock band, iRock, and we are premiering that content on ABC 2. ABC 2, I think, allows us to experiment a bit. We simply do not need to attract the kinds of audiences to ABC 2 as we would reasonably expect to do on ABC 1. So a program like this may have fewer than 100,000 people watch it, which would be as low an audience as we'd ever seen in prime time on ABC 1. But it is appropriate on ABC 2, so we can find new ideas, develop new talent, grow new audiences, and do part of what our charter is meant to do, which is identify new talent, develop artistic pursuits in Australia, and to bring that talent to light for the Australian people. We have a new channel that you'll be aware of, ABC 3. And ABC 3, I think, was another great example of the ABC taking advantage of the opportunity that digital television allowed us to do, which is broadcast more channels, to meet a distinctive gap that exists in free-to-air television. And our proposition to the government around ABC 3 was quite straightforward. If you're going to have 20 free-to-air television channels in Australia, one should be for Australia's children. And if one is going to be delivered for Australian children, it should be delivered by the organisation that parents have trusted to provide television for their children for the last 50 years, and that's the ABC. And we made a commitment that 50% of the content on this channel would end up being Australian content, so it's been a great boom for the Australian children's television production industry. but also, and very importantly for parents, that this content would be commercial free. Now, the pay television industry in Australia strongly opposed this. They argued that there are 8 children's channels on pay TV, so why should the taxpayers fund another one? But our argument back on that, I think, was quite straightforward. Pay TV is not seen in 7 in 10 Australian homes, so we took account of what the industry was doing, but we recognised that 7 in 10 Australian homes did not have a children's channel. We made a clear argument because of the commercial-free environment we could offer it in, because of the Australian content we'd be offering, that we were the people to do it. And we're delighted to say that the program that premiered on the first night of ABC 3 when we launched it last December, a program called My Place, a drama for Australian children, won the Logie Award for Best Children's Television Program last week. That's all that we're doing now, and emerging in a secret bunker somewhere in the ABC is our new 24-hour news channel. The ABC currently, it's important to remember, the ABC currently has the greatest range of news programs currently being put to air on television in Australia and through our Australian network into the region. We have more reporters locally, nationally, and internationally than any other media organisation. We have more content that would be valued by a national audience than we have space to put it to air. And the greatest single cost of creating a news channel is having the content, having the reporters locally, nationally, and internationally that we already have. And so we're going to be harvesting, taking advantage of that great investment that we've already made in news to create the news channel. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And one of the things that we'll be able to do is bring more local stories to a national audience. Dominic Schwartz is here today. She does the 7 o'clock bulletin here, of course, every night of the week. But there'd be many significant stories that only get a run in Adelaide that will now receive national coverage through the 24-hour news channels. Stories that in the battle for space in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane can't find their way onto a 7 o'clock bulletin, but absolutely will find their way as part of the suite of content that is made available on a 24-hour news channel. And the stories that go to air here on Stateline will receive a national airing on the 24-hour news channel as well. We believe that this is a vital service that the ABC can offer to the Australian public. We are creating this news service, having driven efficiencies in our television production model, and we are delivering it without an additional cent of taxpayers' dollars to create the service. And it will be on air in the middle of the year, and if my director of news was here, she'd be mortified that I've already said that much. So I better say no more about it at this time. One of our fastest growing services is iView. The BBC developed an iPlayer, which is a more sophisticated version of a digital catch-up service, for more than £100 million. We developed this for less than 1% than the BBC invested, with the ingenuity of some of our people in our innovation division. And if you haven't seen iView, iView is the ability to go onto your computer and to catch up on television that you've missed. Missed 7:30 report, memorable 7:30 report last night. I missed it. I'll be catching up with it on iView. Four Corners, a Foils War, a range of programs, not just ones we make, but ones that we've purchased and we show. You can catch up and watch it full screen on iView. And this has been one of the great secrets, but it's a secret that's being discovered. This graph shows you the iView traffic for the first 5 months, and you can see a very significant kick-up there in the month of May. And that was triggered by a Four Corners episode we did on a scandal in rugby league. That was a controversial program that the day after was dominating the newspapers. And people had missed out on Four Corners. And so what they did was they went to iView to catch up on the episode. And 20% of all the programs viewed on iView in the month of May were people watching that Four Corners episode. But what is then significant is that having discovered iView, that audience stayed with us and continued to grow and grow and grow through the year, so that by the end of the year it was nearly 1.4 million visits to the iView site. That was then, it was 1.6 million in March, it was 2 million in April. And now we're putting programming up with closed captioning on iView. We expect it to grow even more. And in the month of April, we actually premiered a program on iView, the new series of Doctor Who for all those Doctor Who geeks who could not wait 48 hours for it to go to air. We put it up on iView and they almost melted down our servers as well. Let's talk a little bit about radio. I think radio is the spine and the heart of the ABC, particularly local radio. Radio is personal. People listen for a long period of time, and part of the magic of radio is that you feel that those announcers are talking with you, and they go with you through your day. A deep, enduring connection, and 4.4 million Australians listen to ABC radio each week. And we are continuing to grow our radio services through digital radio. But what we are seeing, and I think it's very significant, is that as we continue to invest local news, local content, local voices, the strength of ABC local radio continues to grow and grow and grow in terms of our reach and in terms of our share. And there is something about people who live in your town, who know the issues that affect you, being able to connect and engage with them that has proven to be very, very strong for us all around the country. Just like digital television allows us to go from broadcasting one channel to many channels in the same spectrum, so does digital radio, and we are rolling out digital radio around the country, and that allows us to do a number of different things. It allows us to broadcast our existing channels, but it allows us to broadcast new networks as well, and if you have a digital radio set, you'll be able to hear Dig Music, ABC Country, ABC Jazz, specialist music channels that we are broadcasting on digital radio. It also allows us to turn channels over to specialist content. We're going to create a special radio station on digital radio for the Sydney Writers Festival, biggest writers festival in the Southern Hemisphere, I think, these days. An amazing array of speakers. Is that bigger? Chris, I'll take your judgment on that. I know. Johnny come lately is on all this. I appreciate that, John. But this is a facility that allows us to basically tape and then broadcast live a whole series of those sessions that you'll be able to listen to on radio around the country. There's an international contemporary music conference that's taking place at the moment. We've broadcast some of that. We've been able to do special programs around Anzac Day. And the other thing that digital radio allows us to do is to deal with some of the frustrations that people have around the rigidity of some of our formats. So increasingly, we are able to broadcast sport on local radio, but continue some local radio programming on ABC Digital. Or we can fulfil our obligations to deliver Parliament on news radio, but keep news radio going on digital radio. And it's only a start, but we believe it's an exciting start. And also underway, just about to launch now, is ABC Open, which is a special program we've been funded by the government to deliver, which basically puts ABC content specialists out in regional areas and helps regional communities to create their own content using fast broadband that will then be put up on the ABC websites, to teach regional Australians digital storytelling skills and then to use the power and strength of the ABC brand to take that to a broader audience. An important part of what we're doing is our international work, largely invisible to an Australian public, but part of our charter. Part of our charter is to reflect Australia to Australians, but to reflect Australia to the world. Radio Australia has been broadcasting for 70 years now into the regions, 7 different international languages we broadcast in. And you can go to places, particularly in the Pacific, and Radio Australia will be providing the only robust independent news service. And when the coup took place in Fiji, and they turned off the transmitters that broadcast Radio Australia from there, we received text messages within Fiji for people pleading with us that we continued the shortwave push into Fiji that we had, so still they could access what was really going on in their country through Radio Australia. Radio Australia, a vital service,
and also a vital service, we believe, Australia Network. Australia Network is a television network delivered by the ABC into 44 countries in the region. And what it basically does is showcase modern Australia. A feature of it is ABC News and Current Affairs. And in my travels in the region, people are amazed to see our news and current affairs go to air in this way. They're amazed that we are a government-funded broadcaster operating in an independent democracy that will take the government's money to fund the journalists to ask really tough questions of the Prime Minister. They're really interested in that. And in a sense, showcasing that as modern contemporary democracy, a robust exchange of ideas, a battle for engagement around compelling issues. That's what we showcase on Australia Network, as well as the best of Australian television, not just ABC programming, but commercial programming as well. The contract for Australia Network is renewed every 5 years. We believe the public broadcaster is absolutely the right organisation to continue to deliver this service. And if you look around the world, most of the international broadcasting arms are delivered by public broadcasters, and we'll continue to strongly make that case. Let me just talk a bit about what we're doing on mobile phone and other applications as well. Because I think this is applicable not just to the ABC, but to all media organisations. The deal used to be we would broadcast it and you get yourself in a position to listen to it and watch it. But the responsibility was back on you. And so in an Adelaide model now, Dominic would sit down. She's going to read that news bulletin at 7 o'clock. If you're not there at 7 o'clock, don't complain to her. Don't complain to me. You didn't have your act together, and you know that she'll be there tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Don't be late this time. That was the old model, really. We broadcast it. You organise yourself to get in place to watch it and listen to it. And if you missed out, there was nothing anything we could do about it. That model has completely changed. Audiences empowered by new technology have absolute control and mastery over what they want. And what they want, the content that you have, at the time they want it, in the format they want it, on the device that they want it. And if you, as a media organisation, are not in a position to deliver it to them, then you're out of the game, somebody else will. And that is why the ABC is not just content to be that old-style broadcaster, recognising our audience just want to sit on the couch and reach for the remote control. Many of them do. But we have to be in a position to deliver our content to our audience at a time they want, on a format they want, on a device they want. The mobile phone is a transformational media tool. And that's why the ABC has developed an iPhone app that you can download free of charge to your iPhone. That means you can receive the latest News in 90 Seconds bulletin that we put to air, highlights of ABC programs. You can watch Media Watch, you know, if you were shamed on Media Watch on Monday night, you can relive the agony again and again by watching it on your iPhone. Currently, we are streaming four of our four national radio networks live on this. Radio National, Triple J, Classic FM, News Radio. And we're keen to expand that into some local radio networks as well. But that is the audience expectation. And the more we deliver these kinds of services, the more the audience want them. The Guardian, operating in a much bigger market than us, downloaded 100,000 of their iPhone apps in 9 weeks. We downloaded 100,000 apps in 5 weeks. And within the first year of the iPhone being launched in Australia, we believe that a third of them had the ABC iPhone app on it. We're playing with the iPad. Can I tell you, you know, I get no respect from my teenage daughters, but the night I brought home an iPad, all of a sudden they started paying me some attention. And I think the iPad is an interesting device. I'm not sure, frankly, that it's a business tool, and I'm sceptical that it's really a replacement for a laptop if you're a business person and you're travelling around and need to work. But as a device for watching and experiencing media, it is unbelievable. It's like that portable television set you just put in your lap, you can pick up and walk around, and you can experience media. So for surfing the net, for watching video, fantastic. And as soon as I sat down with one, I thought, we have got to get iView on the iPad, because that would be a remarkable tool for people to have. And not just the iPad, we developed this for a range of devices that will now come out that will be portable tablets that effectively will allow you to carry with you under your arm 2 weeks of ABC television content that you can sit down and watch at any time or any place you like. So again, in another secret laboratory, speaking a language I don't understand, we have a team of ABC people working on the ABC iPad and iView app. We're continuing to move into this new area of digital content because it's not only where our audiences want to be, it's a great way of telling stories. And if part of our brief is to tell the Australian story to the Australian people, there are some ways of doing it using fast broadband that are unimaginable. We've won multiple awards for our website called Gallipoli, The First Day, which fundamentally follows 14 different people through the first Anzac Day and tells their story about landing on the beaches and what happened to them. It's a project we've done in consortium with Google and Google Maps. It comes to life in 3D. It is a remarkable educational tool. The person who is watching that site, engaging that site, is choosing the story, choosing the path that they want to take. It's very interactive. It's very engaging. We expect this will be used in schools around the country in ever-increasing numbers as we move up to the centenary of Anzac Day in 1915. And it's won all these awards for this kind of work. It's using fast broadband to tell a story in a very interesting way. And another example is the Black Saturday site, where again we went out to the community and we allowed the community to tell their stories about what happened on that day. And you can choose the story, the historical events that you want to follow from that terrible day, that terrible weekend, and tell the follow the narrative of the people that you want to follow as they talk about what they went through. And I thought, wonderfully for us, when Australian Story saw the Black Saturday site, they knew it was just, there were such great stories that Australian Story took one of them themselves and turned it into an episode of Australian Story. And so as we continue to innovate around the HSC, around the ABC, as we continue to innovate, we find new ways of learning and sharing the experience with each other. And so we have new websites like our environment website. One of the challenges of the ABC is that we have so many pages up online. At last count, 6 million pages at abc.net.au. We think the second largest set of pages on a media website behind the BBC. But it can be hard to navigate and hard to find. And so we've created these new devices that actually do the searching for you. So if you're interested in stories on the environment, this new mechanism that we've created searches out all the content on the environment, no matter where it's been created on the ABC. 7 o'clock news story here in Adelaide, a State Line story in Brisbane, a Radio National story on the Science Show, something we've put out on Australia Network, a blog on the Drum, and aggregates it and pulls it all together and presents it for you so you don't have to go and find all those things. It's all there delivered for you as well. And I spoke about the Drum. This is just one of our newer initiatives. What we want to be is Australia's town square. And I think, in a sense, we've always been Australia's town square. The ABC has always been a place that Australians have in common. We own it, we share it, we're part of it, it's part of our lives. And when we talk about the town square, we talk about being a place where Australians can come to listen and learn, to speak and to be heard. And one of the ways we can do that in an online space is the Drum. And on the Drum, you will find a remarkable array of commentary and analysis, some written by ABC staff, much of it not written by ABC staff, representing the full plurality of viewpoints and perspectives around the issues of the day, and opportunities for our audience members to engage in that debate, to read it if they want, but if they want to respond, if they want to engage, that's what they're in a position to be able to do. and we continue to provide those opportunities for our audience engagement. The ABC is the absolute leader in Australia around social media. We have now almost 200 Twitter accounts for different programs of the ABC. We are developing new websites all over Facebook because that's where our audience is as well. 9 million Australians last month went to Facebook, spending an average of 7 hours last month on that site. And so that's why we recognise that the ABC not only has to have great websites, but has to actually be on Facebook to be where our audience is going to be. And finally, just one other case study and example, and then I'll conclude and we'll have opportunities for some questions. I still think it fundamentally goes back to our charter that our responsibility is to take Australian life, to take the Australian story and share it with the Australian people. And this is just one final example. These are four quality Australian films. And we showed them over summer on ABC television. And when they were shown at the cinema, 750,000 Australians in total saw these films. But we showed them on ABC television, and none of these films would have got an airing on commercial free-to-air television. They just were not going to attract the kind of audiences that commercial television needs to reach to attract their advertisers. But 750,000 people saw them in cinemas. 3.8 million Australians saw these over four Sunday nights in summer. The kind of impact on taking great Australian content, delivering it to Australian people, and it being something that we have in common as we go forward. The ABC is in the midst of a transformation, and what I've tried to explain to you today is part of that transformation from an old-style radio and television network to taking advantage of all the tools of the digital era to connect and engage with our audiences in new ways. And when I meet with teams of ABC leaders, I often quote the words of John Shah, an American academic writer and thinker. And John Shah said, "The future is not a place that we are going. It's a place that we are making. And the paths to the future are made, not found. And the process of making them changes both us and our final destination." And one of the feelings I have at the ABC is that it's all changing very quickly. To a degree, we're making it all up as we go along. We're learning, we're failing, we're having great successes, and we're moving on. But we are making the future, and the future that we are making is of a great public broadcaster in the digital era. So I'm going to conclude there, Grant, and let's see if there are questions or issues or cross-examination.
Yes, some questions. There is a microphone there just at the back. Those of you who might have some questions. I've got one to start off with. You have a year left, is it, with your...
Yeah, about a year.
And you would seek to continue?
Oh, that's a really good question to ask, and it's a really good question for me not to answer, Grant, I think. Well, look, I'm having a great time. Someone said to me a while ago, "You've got one of the great jobs in Australia," and I think that's true, and it's interesting every day. And I think we've got a good story to tell, but lots more to do, But finally, I'll have the conversation with the board. Not that I don't appreciate the question, but I'll have the conversation with the board.
Nick.
Mark. Good afternoon. Hi. I'm Nick Nolan, General Manager of Fresh 92.7. We're a community radio station here in Adelaide. We have 182,000 listeners a week, primarily aged between 16 and 39. Very impressed with your presentation. It's lovely to see the expansion of the ABC. But how do you feel we as a community station could better connect with the youth of Adelaide on top of what we offer in terms of FM as our primary broadcasting medium, SMS, and our website?
It's a really good question. Look, I don't think we... I think Triple J has been a great success story for us in recent years. I think the key to younger audiences that we are seeing is that younger audiences view a media experience as something that they participate in. And I think this is what Facebook and YouTube in particular teach us about younger audiences, that their media experiences is as much about creating and sharing as it is about consuming what professionals have delivered for them. And so great success stories for Triple J have been our Unearthed website, where unsigned bands can upload their music and share it and have it heard. The more we open our websites up for audience engagement, audience comment, they really love it. We had a 30% increase in the number of votes this year for the Triple J Hottest 100 because we aggressively drove that campaign through Facebook. And so to take advantage of the social networking tools to really create an environment where young people feel that they own it, they feel that they participate in it, and they can contribute to it, that's where the opportunities lie. And I'm not sure of the precise the impact here, but I know that community radio stations in Sydney and Melbourne have created a strong foothold, despite the strength of Triple J with some of those audiences and all that's happening in the commercial network, by using those kinds of tools.
Verity Edwards, The Australian. First of all, thank you for free-to-air children's TV. I have two young children. Second of all, are you considering commissioning any television programming in 3D or airing anything in 3D?
Not at the moment. My own view is, I mean, I think a lot of the innovation around 3D seems to be happening around premium sport. That's where the innovation is taking place in the US and the UK. I think SBS is looking at that as far as the World Cup coverage is concerned. I think sport, though, is, if I, just as an aside, I think sport is an interesting example. Some of our some commercial media outlets have been critical for in a sense our expansion into new areas. But we are absolutely making choices, and one of the areas that we have withdrawn from effectively is broadcasting a lot of sport on ABC television. When I grew up, Commonwealth Games, Olympic Games, Australian Rules, Rugby League, Rugby Union, Cricket were all broadcast on the ABC. And now we do local footy, and we do women's sports, we do women's basketball, women's soccer, we do the Paralympics, a lot smaller. And that is because we just simply feel that we cannot justify spending the money on the premium sports compared to the other things that we need to do. And so in light of that, I think the 3D innovation is really going to come in the first instance through sports. We have a full slate delivering for free-to-air channels that we'll be delivering with the arrival of the news channel. So no 3D plans at this point.
Christopher Gelly. Are ratings becoming more important or less important to the ABC?
Yeah. I think there's no change in that. I mean, I've only been around for a couple of years, and my feeling on ratings is this, that the ABC would be arrogant if they ignored ratings. Ratings are a sign of audience engagement around content, but they're not the only thing that matters. And we do not program... We do not make programming choices in an effort to win the ratings. The ratings tell us about the levels of audience engagement around our content, but a lot of the content that we put to air on television in prime time, specialist programming around science, some of the documentaries we run, the religious programming we run none of that programming with a thought that we're going to win the ratings. And if you look at our radio networks, particularly our national networks, we know that Classic FM is not going to win the ratings. It's not what it's designed to do, nor Radio National. But if we have some programming that is popular, programming that finds an audience, engages an audience, connects with an audience, there's nothing wrong with that either. So I'm proud of Radio National, and I'm proud of Spicks and Specs. I'm proud of Compass, and I'm proud of 891.
You mentioned one of the highest rating, in fact, the highest. Could you mention, say, five of the
High rating programs for us?
Yes.
Consistently, week in, week out, the 7 o'clock news is a very strong performer for us in the five capital cities, averaging around a million each night. Our comedy lineup on Wednesday nights has been very strong. The Gruen transfer will be coming back for us shortly. That will be strong for us. The librarians and comedies like that have been good. We'll have far more Australian drama on air next year, and quality Australian drama performs well. And our audience do like a bit of British crime. And I know there's a lot of discussion about trouble spots around the world, but in my own view, surely the most dangerous place on the planet is that village where they film Midsummer Murders, where every week somebody gets bumped off.
Mark, Roy Eccleston from the Advertiser. We've already seen a lot of fracturing of what we watch on television with ABC2, or the commercial stations have their own digital networks. And you've talked a lot about how we move content from the TV to the computer. Can you talk a little bit about how you see it happening, perhaps with the national broadband network, when we start seeing the stuff coming back from the computer onto your TV screens?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear more of that.
I think already you can see some of that movement. There are new devices. I mean, for example, I think the Sony PlayStation, the latest example of the Sony PlayStation, allows iView to be seen on your television set. And there are a number of other devices that are coming to air as well. And what you will see shortly, the Telstra T-Box, the Fetch TV box, which are both IPTV players, will also see far more of that computer content migrate to your television set. And even as recently as today, I was talking to someone who was suggesting that your TV set will basically become your computer, and your mobile phone will be the mechanism by which you can inform and guide your way around that. And so I think that's all coming. I think what it really means for television is that the audience will be able to choose what they want to watch when they want to watch it. And the challenge for television networks, I think, will be what does that make television, if that's the case? And so I think you can expect particularly commercial networks to gravitate around three key things, and they are all programs that you have to watch tonight. One is live sport. The other one is events that they create, like a MasterChef or an Australia's Got Talent, and to try and get a big enough audience so that if you go to work tomorrow and you didn't watch it last night, you've missed out. Don't watch it in a week's time. The story has moved on. You've got to watch it tonight. And the third element will be news. And of those three categories, the one that we're going to be investing in primarily is news.
Let's ask a follow-up to that. Given the cross-media law, so newspapers can't operate television stations, do you think that this technology will allow newspaper owners to move into broadcasting?
Yeah, well, I think they can now. I think the laws have changed. What was interesting was that no newspapers wanted to buy television stations, having campaigned to have the rules changed for 20 years. But it's all blurring now. You look at the Drum. There's a lot of text in the Drum. We're a broadcaster, but we're broadcasting text. Fairfax and News Limited are putting a lot more video up on their sites. And so I think there will be increased blurring about what is a broadcaster and what is a publisher in this space. But one of the things I think we can see, even in the last year or two, video is very important online. People want to watch. That's what YouTube is all about, and that's where everyone is investing now. Senator Emeritus.
Chris Schott, been a member of the Australian Journalist Union for, this is my 40th year, and occasionally write an article somewhere or do some commentary. First of all, I'm doing something I've never done before. I want to thank the Managing Director of the ABC in an estimates hearing defending my right to continue being a commentator on 891 when some of my Labor colleagues said it was unfair that I was there and not them. Secondly, about football and sport, it's another comment. About a month or so ago, I watched the Tiwi Grand Final football, which is on the ABC, which was a revelation about how football should be played compared with the sanitised version we get now through the AFL. So more times you show the TV or that type of football, you'll get a bigger audience. And other people who saw it were just fascinated by the quality of what they were watching at a community level. My real question, comment, is about Australian Network.
Yep.
As someone who travels regularly to Asia, particularly to China, for business, for volleyball, the sport I represent in Australia, going to hotels, do you see the competition from all the other major Western economies, Western countries, having on the TV? And there only occasionally do you get, in some hotels, Australian Network.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what the marketing position is about how you get the network at least into every hotel to compete against the French, the Germans, the Japanese, the Indonesians, the Arabs, the Americans, etc. But that really should be a target of getting it into those hotels. It's not expatriates that really is the important market. Most people staying in Chinese 4- and 5-star hotels are Chinese business people. So they get a chance to look and see what Australia is doing and what we're doing. And I think the content is fine, even though I watched the Crows get belted the other day. I think the content is fine. And I wouldn't worry about Chinese trying to work out our self-deprecating humour and the style. That's fine.
Yeah.
But what you could look at, if it can be done on some programs, is put Chinese subtitles.
Yeah. Let me answer that.
Audience, because our future economically, as everyone says, cannot be avoided from China. So I support what you're doing, but I just wondered if we can fine-tune it to get it into more hotels and do some Chinese subtitling.
Let me answer that. I think it's a very important question. Specifically on China, the Chinese government controls who can broadcast in China. You need landing rights and permission for that. We are now 3 years into a campaign to get landing rights. I've been to Beijing regularly myself. We are optimistic about that, but we're not there yet. Apparently, there are about 30 international broadcasters who want about 3 or 4 slots that are there at the moment. More broadly, you're right. We are seeing a massive expansion of the expenditure of countries around the world using broadcasting as an arm of their diplomatic mission, their soft diplomacy. And let me give you some of the numbers. The British are spending $900 million a year on international broadcasting. The French and the Germans are spending about $600 million a year. The Japanese are spending $200 million a year. We are spending $30 million a year. And I have argued, and I continue to argue in Canberra, I'm getting quite a good hearing, that says if we're going to be part of the G20, if we really want to mix in that league, then we have to do what the other members of the G20 are doing, and they are spending very significant money to put their nation out on show through broadcasting. And it's only if we have more money we'll be able to do things like afford subtitling and buy distribution that gets you on the satellite networks, that gets you into the hotel room. So the challenge is a money challenge. I think the Prime Minister is quite open to this argument, and it's an argument that we're continuing to make in Canberra.
Thanks.
You've made comments about crumbling media empires recently. Given increases in advertising revenue recently and the iPad and 3D technology, all things that have happened really in the last few months as well, are you reconsidering your thoughts on crumbling media empires?
No, I just encourage people to read what I said. What I said was that media barons, all sorts of media barons, used to be very, very powerful because of the control that they exclusively exercised in reaching audiences. And every day we now see the rise of the audience and the power of the audience through mechanisms like Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and all the content that is now available. And what I said at the time and what I still believe now is that a failure to recognise that the world has changed, a failure to recognise that audiences have power and that you need to find new mechanisms and new ways to reach and connect with them, I think remains absolutely true. And to simply wish that the world was as it once was rather than it is now would be a dangerous thing for any media organisation to do, including the ABC. And I still think that holds true today. I still think that we need to take advantage of new technology, find new ways of reaching new audiences. And I think my own feeling, even though on something like the iPad, is that I think it is a remarkable additional tool, but I'm not sure it's a replacement tool that will, say, replace all the money that's been lost because of the other changes that exist. And we shouldn't overstate the financial impact of some of the new things that are coming, but we should be vigilant at keeping our own organisations agile to meet those challenges.
I suppose a follow-up question to that, Marky, is that your history is in newspapers, but in the United States, newspapers are falling over all the time. What is the future for them?
Yeah, I think newspapers face a very tough time. I think people have got to understand that the news has always been subsidised. The broadsheet newspapers that I used to operate in, they were subsidised by classified advertising. And none of the journalists really knew that the international bureaus and putting journalists in the Gulf, that was being funded by people selling cars and homes and jobs, but that's what it was. That was a cross-subsidy. Kerry Packer used to cross-subsidise Channel 9 News. Some of those programs, like 60 Minutes and Sunday, in the early years, 60 Minutes didn't make a lot of money. I don't think Sunday ever made any money. But there was a cross-subsidy by a proprietor who was willing to back and invest in news. And I think what newspapers are struggling with is that if customers aren't willing to pay full price, if audiences have more choices, where will the subsidy for news come? Well, at The Australian, which has lost money for most of the years that it's operated, these subsidies come from Rupert Murdoch. And so if you still have proprietors there, those proprietors can still provide that subsidy. But it's a changing world, and there are fewer proprietors, and there are fewer shareholders who are willing to put up with that subsidy. So I don't think we really know what the answer is to the business models that are under very, very significant pressure now. And that's why I think it's a changing world. I think it's evolving. I don't think we know the answers to these things, but you have to keep innovating and trying new ways to connect with audiences.
Thank you, Mark Scott. Stay there for a moment. I think from what we've heard today, it's easy to understand that since taking over at the ABC, Mark Scott has promoted one central theme, that of a fundamental shift in power relationships from media owners to audiences and participants, that the future lies not in owning everything, but in being part of something. And in the ABC's case, there are many parts to something that's growing and that's evolving, as we've seen, almost by the day. And as a world leader, there are few peers in mass broadcasting. Probably no one in the ABC's history has been able to, or has been presided rather over as much change in his time in the office as Mark Scott has so far. So I guess so long as Mark Scott stays at the head of the organisation, I think it's in very good hands. Thank you for addressing us today, and we look forward. Thank you. And Mark, there is a magnum of St Hugo Red here for you to take back to Sydney, if you can find room for it on the plane. Now we have the raffle. Here we go. Tony Agars, you can be barrel girl for the day. Now for the gift voucher from Tim's Manufacturing Jewellers.
Yeah, I haven't got glasses on, Grant. You picked a great one.
Oh, Paul Starrick. Very good. Now, what have we got? The cordless phone from Telstra. We have a red E89 Sarah purse. Some beer. A red E39. Red E39. And finally, a gift pack from Ten. It's a blackie. We have a black E3. Nicola Martin.
Good on you.
Thanks, Tony. Okay, before we wind up, a reminder that our next lunch is on Thursday, June the 3rd. The doyen of football commentators, Dennis Cometti from the Seven Network, is our guest that day, and I know that bookings are certainly streaming in for that function, so you'd be advised to get in early. If you're not already on our email list or mailing list, please leave your business card at the front when you leave. Thank you again, Mark Scott, for talking to us today. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Goodbye.